This is A-State Connections on KASU. I'm Jonathan Reeves. This is the weekly segment called A-State Connections and Create at State, Making Connections That Count. This podcast episode takes place at a little-known area on the Arkansas State University campus. It's just after 6 o'clock on a Wednesday morning. Several students arrive at the location of Arkansas State University's Bird Observatory. It's located between the bridges of the Marion Barry Parkway, and this morning, students are conducting a bird banding exercise. Students have nets set up to catch birds for identification. Students look in the nets about every 30 minutes to see if they have a bird. Before the first check, I talked to Associate Professor of Ecology at Arkansas State University, Dr. Thawne Bovis.
Tell us a little bit about this bird observatory. We're actually looking at birds that are kind of flying overhead right now. Kind of tell us about the bird observatory and how long this observatory has been on campus.
Sure. We started the bird observatory, I think it's about 5 years ago now, right, Alex? Yeah, about 5 years ago. And when we started it, we had really four goals. And so just to tell you what a bird observatory is, a bird observatory is a place where people go to study birds, to monitor populations, to learn about birds, to get the community engaged with birds. And so really those are the kind of the main goals that we had all along. One, to have a place where we could add to our understanding of bird migration, of the health of populations that are moving from North America to South America, and add to this global database where anyone then could use the data to understand how birds are doing, to understand where they're moving from and to, and to do any sort of, ask any sort of research questions related to bird movements and bird populations. There's nothing else like this in the region. And while this is relatively a small scale operation, we do capture a decent number of birds every fall, and we keep our nets open for about 6 weeks in the fall. And so back to the overall goals. Secondly, we have a lot of students here that are in wildlife or in conservation and gaining experience handling, identifying, sexing, and aging birds is a really important skill that a lot of them will need to know. And so there's an educational component to get students experience handling and processing birds. And then third, we do have a couple active research projects that this operation adds to, in particular one involving feather mites and the coevolution between feather mites and their bird hosts, in particular warblers. And actually one of the species of feather mites that we have described, new species of feather mites that we described, was collected. They were all specimens were collected here at the A-State Bird Observatory, and they're named after Jonesboro. They are Amarodectes jonesborensis, and they are found on northern water thrush, which is a type of migratory warbler that actually doesn't breed anywhere near here. But apparently, they find our banding station a nice place to stop over while they're migrating from the northern U.S. and Canada down to Central and South America. And then finally, the last goal of ours is to engage with the community. So this is open with open arms to anyone from the community that would like to come and learn about birds, see birds up close. So little kids to older people to any adults to anyone that is interested in engaging with birds and getting a chance to see them up close and learn more about them. And so those are the overall goals of this operation. And so what we have here is a bunch of nets set up in the woods and in the habitat around us. And we set those up. And right now we're just doing completely passive netting where we just let the birds fly around as they normally would. And if they happen to fly into the net, then we will go catch them and extract them from the nets and bring them over here, and then we'll process them and identify them, age them, sex them, and do a few other things. Once in a while, we'll also cheat and we'll increase our capture rate by using speakers to play back sounds that will attract individuals to the net. And so we'll use both of those strategies while we are working out here.
Is this bird banding? Is that what it is? And what specifically is that?
Yeah, so bird banding is a method of marking birds so that we can identify an individual at a later date. And so we have government, federally issued aluminum bands that we put around their legs, and those bands have specific numbers on them that are unique to that band and that band only. And so if we or someone else ever see or capture this bird again and they can read the numbers on that band, they will know exactly where that individual was captured, when it was captured, how old it was when it was captured, the health of the bird at that time, and so forth.
Right. And this is something, birding is something that has become very popular, and actually something that I know that over the years really leads to tourism dollars in the state and those kinds of things. It really has been taking off over the past several years.
The economic value of birds when you incorporate bird watching into it is incredible, in the billions of dollars per year in the United States alone, through direct tourism, but also through indirect things like purchase of binoculars and field equipment. And so, yeah, there is the potential for a huge economic impact of birds. And that is, again, something that by engaging the public, potentially we could help increase in the region. And that would be awesome if we were known for our bird diversity, as well as other sorts of industries that we have here.
And why is it birds? Why do you think people are so interested in birds and birding and this thing? Why do you think people are so captivated by birds?
Well, I think there's probably a few explanations. One is pretty deep in time. Culturally, we've always had myths and legends, and many of our religions revolved around birds, and they've always played a major role in human culture. More recently, and on an everyday basis, birds are one of the most obvious of all the large animals. So, you know, people might like mammals a lot because we are mammals, but it's pretty hard to go out and watch mammals. It's pretty hard to go out and see a lot of mammals in a single day. They're secretive or they're difficult to find, whereas birds are everywhere. You walk outside and you can hear birds, you can see birds, and so they are constantly around us, and they stimulate a lot of our senses with their sound and their bright colors. And so I think those two things in particular are big parts of why people are so captivated by birds. Also, there's a ton of different species of birds. In Arkansas alone, you can see over 300 species of birds. You couldn't get anywhere close to that with mammals and reptiles, for that matter, or amphibians. And so of the vertebrates that are relatively easy to see, they are by far the most diverse. And so that is really exciting for people that want to try to see as many different living things as they possibly can.
Tell us about the students that are out here, if you don't mind, please, sir.
Sure. This is a mix of students that are graduate students that are in my lab and in other labs. That some of them study birds, some of them study reptiles. Let's see if there's anyone else out here right now. And then we also have a few people from the community and faculty. So we have another professor here, Dr. Virginie Roland, and we have a seminar speaker here today that's from Colorado State University, and so she's going to be giving a seminar later today. And then there's a couple people that I don't know yet that look like they are from the community that I will get to meet in a little bit. But we also have undergrads that are either biology majors or otherwise, looks like wildlife. And then we have actually a student from Querétaro who is out here that is doing study abroad this semester here in Jonesboro, but he'll go back to a state, Querétaro, to finish his degree, I think. Maybe he'll stay here forever, I don't know.
Yeah. Dr. Thon Bovis joins us here on the Created State podcast on KASU. So as we're recording this right here on a Wednesday morning, you all have chosen Wednesday and Sunday mornings to do this. Is there a certain reason why you've picked those mornings?
No, actually, no. Well, there is. It's just based on our schedules. I actually have to teach at 9, so I don't stay that late on Wednesdays. But other students who have the... So we always have to have at least a basic group that has the skill and the expertise to extract birds, set up the nets, and do all that. And those are just a few students that can do that, and myself. And so those students have Wednesday mornings available. And then for me, Sunday mornings work well on the weekend because I have free time and I'm able to come out here. So it's mostly just convenience for our schedule. A full-scale banding operation might be open 5 or 6 days a week, where they have 25 to 30 nets up. We only have 5 or 6 nets, and we're only open a couple of days a week. So we have a much smaller scale operation because this is not our major main responsibility here on the campus, and we're just doing this as an additive bonus for for students and for our own research projects.
Right. And what's it been like working with these students out here for this particular project?
It's been awesome. For me, it's almost a invaluable way to get students experience and to get students engaged with birds. Really, you can take students out bird watching with binoculars and they can learn how to identify birds, but when they get a bird in the hand and they get to see it up close and they get to talk about the anatomy and the physiology that we've discussed in class, it changes the way that they look at things. We get to see migration in action, more or less, where we're watching these birds on their way from, again, could be as far north as northern Canada all the way down to Central and South America. And so we're getting to experience at least a little snapshot of what these birds are going through. And so, for instance, we get to watch, and students get to watch, the process of how they put on fat for energy reserves for that migratory journey. And so we'll catch a bird one day and it has zero fat and it weighs 12 grams. And we'll catch a bird a week later, same bird, and we'll know it's the same bird based on those band combinations that I talked about. And they'll start to put on fat and they'll start to gain weight, which is all going to be burned off on that journey southward. And so this is a spot called the stopover location where these birds can then fatten up, get ready for this journey, and the students get to experience that. And so I can talk about migration in class and I can say, yeah, they do this, they put on fat, but then out here the students can actually see that in action and kind of experience it a little bit as if they were the bird.
How many birds would you normally catch, possibly, for identification?
In a single day or over the entire season?
Well, let's do both, maybe in a day and in a season.
So it can be really variable. And so birds are very sensitive, especially migratory birds, are very sensitive to weather conditions, in particular winds. And so if the winds are blowing in the right direction, and at this time of the year that would be blowing from the north because they are heading south, you will get large bursts of activity where birds are flying from the north and then eventually stopping over. And so a lot of it depends on what the winds were like the night before. Most of these birds are small songbirds that migrate at night. And so if the winds were good the night before, we could have a lot of activity and we could catch 20 to 30 birds. If the winds were kind of inappropriate, either blowing the wrong direction or not blowing that much at all, then we might only get a few birds in the day. And so over the whole season, we usually catch between 150 to 200 birds, somewhere around there.
The first check at 7 o'clock is not successful. No birds in the nets. In between the breaks, I talked with some students. First, I talked with graduate student Kevin Crager.
I'm a graduate student under Dr. Bovis, and I'm studying feather mites and their relationship with passerine birds. So I'm a master's student in biology.
Awesome. So tell us about this research and how long you've been doing this out here at the Bird Observatory.
So this is my second year working with him, and so I was out here last fall. We did this, and so this is my second time doing bird banding here this fall. The research doesn't necessarily apply too much to my project. I'm looking more at the ecology of the feather mite and bird interaction. We do collect feather mites from birds out here, and I do get practice, you know, looking at the birds, checking them for feather mites, doing that sort of thing. But not so much directly applying to the birds that I'm using for my project.
Right.
It's still related, though, because we are using the feather mites for various other projects,
right,
kind of related.
And what are the feather mites?
So they are small, what we call ectosymbiotic arthropods. So they're just like any other mite or tick, very closely related. And ectosymbiont just means that they live outside of the bird. We call them symbionts because we don't know whether they are beneficial, harmful, or kind of neutral to the bird. We're investigating that relationship in my project a little more. The feather mites are really diverse but kind of poorly studied. Like I said, we don't know the exact relationship. We're kind of looking into that. And there's a huge diversity of feather mites that we still need to explore. So they're a very cool group. They live primarily on the wing and tail flight feathers of the birds. So you don't really find them on the body of the bird, more so just the wing and the tail. And we believe they eat things like bacteria and fungi that live on the feather and a little bit of the bird's oil. Like, we have oil on our skin, birds put oil on their feathers. So we believe they consume some of that as well. Right. So.
What is it that attracts you to be able to come out here and do this every morning that y'all are able to?
Yeah, it's just exciting to, you know, you never know what you're going to catch in the net. So getting experience with the different kinds of birds, holding them, IDing them, gaining that experience for practical future research applications. So just getting used to using the field guides that we have and practicing that identification process, how to age a bird, how to tell its sex, those sorts of things. Also, it's really cool to get to engage with other students and tell them the little things that I know about birds and share that information with them and use this kind of as both practice for me and, you know, perhaps an educational opportunity for others.
Yeah. How did you come to Arkansas State?
So I had finished my undergraduate degrees at Hendricks College in Conway, and then I ended up taking a gap year, took the time to apply to graduate school, and my advisor at the time, Dr. Maureen McClung from Hendricks, she knew Dr. Bovis and recommended me to him, and I reached out to him. We got talking and decided on a project, and I decided to come here to pursue that degree because I always knew I wanted to go to graduate school, and so having that connection and that opportunity made it happen.
And how's it been working with Dr. Bovis? How has he impacted your life?
So he's been really helpful in getting me like out in the field. Like I before hadn't had much field experience. And so this last summer I had my first field season. He was super helpful with that. We had a great time. And then he organizes things like this, like bird banding, which we get to do during the year and just provides a lot of outreach opportunities. And so it's really cool to have a mentor work so closely with that and, you know, get these opportunities for where I can act as a mentor, where I can do my own research, and so it's been pretty cool.
I also had the opportunity to talk with a PhD student, Alex Matthews.
How'd you come to Arkansas State?
I actually got my master's here in 2017, and then took 2 years off, and then migrated back to Thon's lab to do more research.
Right. So tell us about, does this research help with your overall PhD project that you're working on?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm working on one of the feather mite projects where we're surveying birds that, particularly warblers, for feather mites and looking at what species of feather mites they have and if any of the birds share feather mites. And kind of the coevolution between the mites and the birds.
Right. And how has Dr. Bovis been able to help you with your, you know, with your work in that regard?
He and I have done a lot of field work together, so going out and catching the birds. And so he has been very helpful in terms of understanding the ecology of the birds themselves, and then we've both kind of explored feather mites together, sort of from the ground up. We really didn't know much about them when we first started. Back in 2014 is when I started my master's, and we really didn't know anything about these feather mites. We knew a lot about the birds, but we didn't know anything about the feather mites, and so we have really developed this project together, and it's been really fun.
So you've been here from the very beginning of the Bird Observatory, is that right, kind of?
Yeah, I was here before, right as it was beginning. Yeah, a little before it started and right as it got going.
Right, and so you've kind of seen, more and more people get involved and more students get involved in this. What does it mean to have this kind of observatory here at Arkansas State that not only students could, you know, observe, but the public could observe too?
Yeah, this is a really neat thing for Arkansas State to have for students and the public, because a lot of people don't even really notice birds as much. They see them, but they don't really know much about them. And being able to hold a bird in the hand is just so different than just watching a bird at your feeder or something. And looking at the feather patterns and looking at the things that live on birds, and seeing what kind of how many different species we have here on campus is pretty unique, and then it's right. I mean, it's about as close as you can get to the library and a lot of other buildings on campus. So it's really accessible for people in the public and students. And most universities don't have a piece of land like this where they can go and catch birds and learn about them.
Right. And so I know that this definitely is something that, that excites you. I know to be able to be, it's kind of like you're in your element, I guess, when you're out here kind of, you know, watching and looking.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So what do you hope the overall goal of this will be, you know, by way of what you all are doing out here? What do you hope the overall goal is for your research and just in general?
Yeah, I mean, for my research, I like to catch as many bird species as possible and gather as much data about feather mites as I can. But more importantly, I think, is sort of the outreach that this bird observatory provides for the public and for the students, because that's sort of what got me into birding is being able to go out in band and see these birds in the hand and look at them close up and see how beautiful they are and what they can teach us about our environment. So I think that's really important, just to kind of experience it firsthand.
How do you think that by using this particular, you know, research and other things that y'all are doing with birds, how do you think that this helps by way of Arkansas State making an impact in the community and then the knowledge of these areas? How do you think it's helping in that impact?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that it's just a really unique thing that Arkansas State has to have this banding station, because people in this area are interested in wildlife. There's a lot of parks around. There's a lot of we have the nature center in town, and this is just an additional kind of outlet for people to come and learn, which I think people are really interested in. Because when you tell people, yeah, we've got a banding station on campus, they're like, really? I had no idea, but I'd like to come out there and see it. And so I think that Arkansas State, this is kind of a gem that Arkansas State has for outreach and for research and for the community as a whole.
All right, I'm feeling good about this next run, guys.
You feeling good about this?
Feeling positive, yeah. So this is one of these cases where we've had southerly winds, so blowing in the wrong direction in terms of birds migrating to the south. And so a lot of birds will just kind of hang out wherever they're at till the winds shift to the right direction. And unfortunately, the next few weeks looks like a lot of southerly winds. And so if there's no reason for the birds to go, they don't necessarily have to go. Eventually they will, but they will hang out for 2-3 weeks when they would have left earlier if the winds had been blowing in the correct direction. And then suddenly you'll get a shift in the northerly winds, and then you'll get these big movements of birds that you can actually identify from weather radar. If you look at weather radar the night before, you can see the birds lifting off the ground, getting ready to migrate. Jacob, have you checked them out the last few days? I would guess they're probably pretty light. Between the hurricane on the East Coast and the southerly winds on this side, in the central U.S., probably not a lot of birds leaving right now. And so they'll just wait. They'll wait for the right conditions, and then eventually they'll take off.
Yeah.
And then we'll start to get the birds passing through here that we are trying to monitor.
After a while, the second check is awesome. Successful.
We got a bird.
Students come back with a bird.
So when this happens, what's the process of what happens next?
Joe is going to remove the bird from the bag carefully. You can... It's kind of... Yeah, he's...
Wrens are wily little creatures.
They are wily, yes.
So what do we have?
Carolina wren. And he's very flustered, or she is very flustered right now in the bag while Joe's trying to get it out. But he's going to put it in Bander's grip and remove it to try to keep it from flapping around.
We have an ongoing competition here at the banding station.
Right.
For every bird we catch, we guess how much we think it weighs. Everyone guesses their own guess, unique guess, and whoever gets it right gets a point. And at the end of the year, whoever has the most points gets an amazing prize to be determined at a later date.
Now it's on record.
Pat on the back, ice cream sundae, $1 million, who knows, it could be anything.
Extra credit, maybe?
Well, they're not in my, none of these people are in my class, so I don't, I mean, I'll give them extra credit, though. Oh, you're in my class. Sorry, I forget.
Different motivation.
Yeah, it depends what time of year.
I feel like Bill is just here for the love of birds.
So now Joe is measuring the length of the bird's wing. So he's measuring the wing and the length of the wing and the length of the tail. And Jacob is filling out the banding sheet.
And why is all this important?
These are data that can be used to assess the bird's age and the bird's health. Like right now, Joe is kind of blowing on its breast and looking for fat deposits. So migratory birds will stock up at the end of the breeding season for their migration back south.
And if you notice, this bird had zero fat, which reflects exactly what Alex was saying. Migratory birds usually will put on a bunch of fat reserves for their migration. This is a non-migratory species. This is a resident species that doesn't leave. He or she could be here all year long and spend the winter here, spend the spring here, have babies here, and for that reason, typically they don't put on a lot of fat because they're just constantly using that energy for things that they're doing immediately rather than for future use.
The Carolina wren is, the males and the females look similar, and so we have to use a book to help us identify whether it's a male or a female based on weight or wing length and also the age of the bird. You can tell by different feather patterns. But a lot of the time you have to use the book because it's different for different species. Some are pretty similar, but for different species the patterns are slightly different. So you have to use a guide to help you identify the age and the sex. And so he's holding it in Bander's grip right now, where he's got the head kind of in between his knuckles. And the wings are closed shut by the rest of his. He's kind of cupping his hand around the rest of the bird to prevent it from bumping its wings too much and straining itself.
Seems like that would be kind of a hard thing to master at first, you know, trying to be able to get the right grip.
It actually comes pretty naturally. For smaller birds, you kind of maybe a little more scared because you're afraid of crushing them. But if you practice a couple of times, it becomes pretty natural pretty quickly.
So after this, will they put the band on?
I think he may have already put the band on. We might have missed it.
Okay, no, that's fine.
But it's already on. Okay, yeah, he already put the band on.
And where did he put the band on?
On the ankle of the bird, which kind of looks like its legs.
Right. What happens next?
I don't think we've weighed it yet, so we're going to put it in. We have a small scale, and we'll tear the scale and put a cup on it, or put the bird in a small cup, and then weigh the.
Here are the bands.
Yeah.
17. Here's our metal band.
So it's on its.
Right. So it was it hard to put the band on the bird?
No, these birds are known for being particularly easy to get away and kind of sneaky. So you do have to kind of hold them in your hand a little bit more tightly than some other birds. But for the most part, it's pretty easy once you have them in the bander's grip to really work with them.
Right.
And so people from the community can come out and see this firsthand and take photos and share with their friends. And
who wants to guess the weight?
Oh, yeah, now we have to guess the weight.
How fat? It's a young bird. I'm going to say it's pretty medium to heavy. I would say.
I'm going to say 16, yeah.
Oh, I'm going to say 18.1.
I'm going to say 17.5.
17.6.
So now he's putting it in the small cup.
Oh, I'm going to say 17.
And you're saying 18, 17.
I said 17.5.
And
19.4.
And what is that by way of this specific weight?
Yes, that's the mass, and it's in grams.
So as you can see, like even when I put him in there, he kind of was backing out, because these birds are really, really tricky. They can get out of almost any space if you give it to them.
So he's positioning it in photographer's grip, and he's going to...
So this bird is going under doing molt, and we think that it's a young bird, so this may be its first molt, so it's actually growing in its second set of feathers. And so as you can see, it's kind of a little bit more ratty looking than it normally would be, and we see these new pins developing right here where feathers are going to emerge eventually. And these birds actually do what's known as symmetrical molt. So on their wings, they're going to molt in. If one feather is being molted on one side, the exact same feather will be being molted on the other side. And so that helps with balance and then as well as flying abilities for these little guys. So this is a really energetically expensive time for these birds because they don't migrate. So molting and the reproductive time is really when they're going to be expending their most energy. So that's why he's not looking the greatest right now, but hopefully in a few weeks or so he'll have a fresh new set of feathers to get him through the winter.
And he just flew away.
That's what we were saying. They get away pretty easily if you don't have them in a tight enough grip.
Students are at the Bird Observatory every Wednesday and Sunday morning, just after 6. The public's also invited to watch birds and see the process. They'll be at the Bird Observatory through the middle of October. To hear more of the Created State podcast, please go to our newest platforms. We're excited to announce that we're on Spotify now. Just type in Making Connections That Count in the search bar and you'll find the show. Show links will also be on the story on our website. Also, we're on the TuneIn app as well as other traditional platforms like Apple and Google Play. Please tell others about the Created State podcast and also leave us a review. We'd love to hear from you. You've been listening to A-State Connections and the Created State podcast on KASU.